Hi, listeners. This is Suzanne Harris, Environmental Forum member and your host for EFM Live, a limited series podcast talking about the environmental issues with a focus on Marin County. We're really excited. It's our first show, and a lot of work has gone into this. What's our podcast about? Well, it's three episodes, and we will tell you what you need to know about plastic now, its effects on human health. We'll also answer your questions about how it's being disposed of, even incinerated, what's Marin doing, and what you can do as a consumer. Why do a podcast? It's a good question. Since 1972, the Environmental Forum of Marin has been the leading environmental educator in Marin, offering courses to the public taught by leaders in the movement and inspiring Marin residents to take action to protect the environment. As the need for action becomes more urgent, EFM is looking to expand its audience and reach a younger generation of environmentalists. And really, the best way to do that is in the digital realm. This series will help you make sense of the latest research, inform you about plastics' effects on human health, give you ideas for taking action for you and your community. And my collaborator for this podcast is Susan Holloway, an EFM member and researcher. She has assembled tons of research, and together we developed the podcast narrative. Her work has been invaluable. Today, we dive into several key issues: why plastic is still everywhere in spite of our efforts, and how this has changed since plastic was invented. What happens to plastic when we're finished with it? And how much is it recycled, and what happens to the rest of it? So let's get started. I want to start by acknowledging the pandemic and the turmoil taking place in our country. It's been impacting us severely, emotionally, physically. None of us know what the future looks like. And climate change, though, will not be ignored. Oh no, it will again be back on center stage very soon. And maybe, just maybe, this hunker down time can give us new ideas about how to work together and make a difference for our planet. I can't help but think that that will happen. I want to read you a quote that's always inspired me. Maybe it'll help you. Small acts, when multiplied by millions of people, can transform the world. The author of that is unknown. So back to plastic. When I did the research for this narrative, I learned some sobering facts. As early as the 1950s, scientists knew that plastics were polluting the ocean. 20 years later, there was clear evidence that it was harming marine life. And 20 years later was the 1970s. So I'm going to rewind to the 1970s and read you a quote by Barry Commoner, who was a scientist and environmental trailblazer. It's from a 1971 speech he gave to Congress about the environment. In his talk, Commoner talked about plastics in our oceans. I was astonished the other day to find a paper which reported that in deep-sea jellyfish in the Northland, phthalates were detected. What are phthalates? They are ubiquitously used in plastic. They're used in automobile plastic upholstery particularly, and they contain phthalates. These plasticizers are volatile, and they've been shown to cause birth defects. They are now in the ocean, inside jellyfish. I think this emphasizes the seriousness of the role that the ocean is playing as a sink for all the poisons we are producing. So there it is. We knew then the harm that we were inflicting on marine life. I didn't know anything about Commoner until I worked on this project, and I was fascinated by him and inspired by everything I read. Time magazine called him the Paul Revere of ecology. He wrote a book called Closing Circle, which was published in 1971, and in that year, he argued that the U.S. was in an environmental crisis. He described our method of producing goods as destructive to human civilization. So how much is plastic permeating our lives? Well, I recently did an inventory of the plastic in my house. And while I try to keep plastic consumption to a minimum, I was really alarmed to find how ubiquitous it was still in my life. Well, it's in makeup containers, my office products, clothing, computers, phones, pens, thermometers, toothbrushes, containers of prepared food, and in medication bottles. A note about clothing. You might have clothes that are made of polyester, nylon, or acrylic. And what I didn't know until I read it is that each wash, when you put them in the washer, it sheds millions of plastic microfibers, and they pass through wastewater treatment plants directly into the ocean. And these microfibers are thinner than human hair, so you really can't see them. Yeah, enough to make you mad, huh? Well, for me, being more informed was energizing. I felt a greater sense of urgency, and I was motivated to do a better job at finding alternatives to plastic, especially after learning how much plastic we're talking about, 8.3 billion tons. That's the amount of plastic that's been generated in our country between 1953 and 2015. That's about 1 billion elephants, or think of 25,000 Empire State Buildings, or even imagine this. Every year, Americans buy enough plastic to shrink wrap the entire state of Texas. Can you imagine that? Now, can you guess what the biggest source of plastic waste is? Just in case you didn't guess, it's plastic bottles. We've all been drinking bottled beverages for over a century. Once upon a time, we drank from glass, then it was steel, and later aluminum cans, until the 1970s when Dow Chemical invented the miracle plastic they called PET. It was lightweight, safe, cheap, and they claimed it was recyclable. What a marketer's dream, huh? In 2017, 1 million plastic beverage bottles were purchased every single minute. And get this, plastic bottles and jars represent 75% of all plastic containers. Now, those of us in the Bay Area are seeing that we are going backwards in a positive way as more manufacturers and people are using steel and glass bottles. So how did we get here? I've thought a lot about this and I've read about it, and I believe that there are two parts to the story. One, it's history, the growth of industry in the 20th century, which drove consumer demand to save time and improve their social standing. And this gave birth to what I believe is a toxic partnership of plastic marketers and consumers. Here's a short story that illustrates this point. Are you familiar with Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks? Well, actually, the late Carl Reiner. Just in case you're not, they're two legendary comedians. Mel Brooks is 94, and Carl Reiner just recently died at 98 years. They got their start in the 1960s with a series of skits. One was called The 2,000-Year-Old Man. It's very funny. You can find it on YouTube. Mel Brooks plays the 2,000-year-old man, and Carl Reiner, the man who interviews him. In one of their most famous skits, Mel is asked what man's greatest invention was, and he replies, without missing a beat, Saran Wrap. So I'm going to start with the story of Saran Wrap. It was an accidental discovery in the 1930s by a man named Ralph Wiley, who was an employee at Dow Chemical. He was working on a chemical procedure and produce inadvertently PVDC, polyvinylidene. He noticed it was sticky and water resistant and couldn't be washed from the bottom of the beaker that it was created in. And it had lots of advantages. It was cheap to produce. It was lightweight. They found it kept food fresh. And it was impervious to water, and this characteristic enabled it to be used in a range of products. By 1948, Dow Chemical introduced Saran Wrap, the plastic wrap that we know today. So who is this new product marketed to, and how is it marketed? Well, the industry began during World War II, and during the war, it was used exclusively by the military, and of course, the U.S. government invested heavily in it. During that time, a soon-to-be powerful lobbying group called the Society for Plastic Industries, SPI, was developed. That's something just to keep in mind because they were a big force in marketing plastic over the years. After the war, plastic marketers needed to create a new market. So consumers needed to be sold on plastic wrap, and the product had some challenges. Plastic couldn't be repaired when it broke. That was obvious. It melted when it was heated, and then it smelled very strange. And at this point, consumers didn't have any interest. However, by the 1950s, they had a captive audience of upwardly mobile consumers. It was an era of prosperity, and women made the purchasing decisions then. So marketers collaborated with the media promoting modern plastics. One example, they produced a movie that was targeted to housewives demonstrating plastic wrap's myriad of uses. The backdrop was a spacious, sunlit kitchen featuring a happy mom and daughter. Can you just envision that? They were wrapping beef patties, twisting the plastic decoratively around homemade candy, and talking about how fresh it kept the food. Monsanto got into the act. They collaborated with Disneyland and featured the first all-plastic house as their Plastics of the Future exhibit. By demonstrating how plastic could improve their lives, marketers were successful in creating a need, and plastic sales shot upward. By 1960, plastic had become one of the largest industries in the world. However, again, life had changed by the 1960s. It ushered in a decade marked by assassination, the civil rights movement, Vietnam War, and a very important book called Silent Spring by Rachel Carson, warning of the dangers of pesticides. It was the beginning of the environmental movement. And 1970 was our first Earth Day. Consumers were being gradually educated to some of the dangers of plastic. Although SPI, that lobbying group that I talked about, had deep pockets and launched a successful ad campaign convincing consumers who were on the fence that plastic was really okay. The next four decades, consumers were awakening to their power over industry. So here's the big question. What was the consumer's part in what's called our plastic addiction? Well, there's a few factors here. Speed and efficiency was increasingly rewarded. Our fast-paced society put higher and higher expectations on us. Just one example is that a woman was expected to be able to work full-time, raise children, as well as care for a household, including making meals. And the obvious question was, how was she going to fit that into her day? Our throwaway culture, as it's called, it's sometimes portrayed as a human failing, but it certainly was a natural desire to have more leisure time, right? And plastic offered that. Women were increasingly considering their careers as equally important in their lives, and plastic offered them advantages. It was clutter-free, easier, no need to clean, no dishes. I'm going to stop and do a little time out in this story to talk about some of the substances used in plastic production, like a mini tutorial. So PVC, I'm sure you've heard this word, you may be familiar with it, polyvinyl chloride. It's a flammable gas and a toxic chemical whose additives can leach out. It's used in pipes, flooring, medical devices, siding, electric cables, shoes, clothing, and plastic wrap. There's also PVDC, polyvinylidene chloride. That's also plastic wrap ingredient. It's clear, flexible, and a synthetic thermoplastic. It's also a gas. The main difference between PVDC and PVC is that PVDC is thinner. So another chemical, polyethylene, PET, that is used to make water bottles, soft drink bottles. It comes from natural gas, but the process of extraction is dangerous. It can also leach a chemical called antimony, which is toxic when heated. This can cause vomiting, diarrhea, respiratory irritation, and stomach ulcers. It may also be a carcinogen. One more chemical, plasticizers. Plastics used for food packaging are often mixed to make plastics softer, more flexible, and more transparent. Phthalates. They contain carcinogens and they're easily absorbed into food. Talk about plastic disposal. There's some inconvenient realities about plastic disposal and specifically about recycling. Let's talk about plastic wrap specifically. It's thin, flimsy, and very difficult to recycle, impossible to recycle, actually. It clogs recycling machinery, especially when food is stuck to it. It's impossible. It ends up in landfill or incinerators or washing down our waterways. So just remember that when you use plastic wrap, it or plastic bags or anything that's flimsy, that is plastic, you can't recycle it. Only 9% of plastic generated since the 1950s has been recycled. 12% is incinerated, and 79% is languishing in landfills, where it never breaks down. Worse, if it's dumped into a landfill or burned in an incinerator, both PVC and PVDC release dioxins, which are highly toxic, according to the WHO. It ends up floating in the ocean, breaking down into tiny particles called microplastics. It mixes with sand on the beaches, seagrasses, and then it's ingested by fish, birds, whales, turtles, and marine mammals. Years ago, recycling was considered a panacea. What happened? Besides the fact that China isn't taking our plastic anymore, the reality is that there really isn't a market for recycling plastic. Unfortunately, new plastic is cheaper and better quality than old plastic, and production continues to rise. The U.S., for this reason, hasn't generated enough demand for alternatives. It's expensive to recycle old plastic. The expenses have to do with equipment, labor costs for pickup, their sorting, cleaning, identifying, and processing. And unfortunately, the recycling downgrades the quality of plastic. So once plastic has been recycled after its second or third iteration, it's no longer usable. I had no idea that each time virgin plastic has to be infused to improve plastic's quality. And the process, the other factor about this is it endangers human or animal life. Melting it produces VOC or volatile organic compounds and fumes that harm plant and animal life. When you heat it to melt, plastic generates carbon emissions and contributes to global warming. Some plastic is still sent to countries like Bangladesh, Laos, Ethiopia, and Senegal. I'm not sure how much longer that can be sustained, but it's a danger to their population. The fumes, when melted, can make them sick, and it damages their water supply. So plastic recycling in general in the U.S. is decreasing rather than increasing. What about biodegradable plastic? Well, so-called biodegradable plastic may not degrade in your compost. Most only degrade in an industrial composting plant. What about incinerating plastic waste? Is it bad? And can it produce power? A lot of people say that, and the experts say it's not effective. It's not cost effective because the technology and the cost is not offset by the power generated by burning it. At this point, we're much better off with renewable energy. It also generates toxic ash, and about 10 to 15% of the original volume of the waste is then disposed of as hazardous, which is bad. Most municipal waste incineration facilities were built before 1997, and so they don't have the technology to address toxic air emissions. There's a movie called The Story of Plastics, and I highly recommend if you can see it. Do a Google search for it, and you'll get the website will come up. They'll tell you when they're next screening it, and they'll also show you a trailer. It's again, it's worth learning about. They talk about that the plastic industry is still banking on plastic as a continuous source of revenue for them in the future. And their argument is that the world's population simply has to do a better job of recycling. But I don't think that's the answer. By now, I think you're ready for some good news, and I have a great story for you about a group of environmentalists who took legal action. This happened this year. A Berkeley-based organization called the Earth Island Institute filed a lawsuit in San Mateo Superior Court, and they accused 10 of the biggest soft drink, food, candy, personal care, and cleaning products manufacturers of false claims that their packaging material could be recycled. It was the first attempt of the U.S. to hold some of these world's largest consumer products businesses liable for plastic pollution. Unfortunately, we're almost out of time, but I want to talk a little bit about our next two episodes about plastic. The next one will have to do with their effects on human health. And to help us, Susan Holloway talked to Dr. Zoe Quant, a physician at UCSF specializing in endocrinology. She'll tell us what she's doing as the mother of a one-year-old child to avoid exposing him to the toxins associated with plastics. Our third episode will be centered in Marin, and it should be especially exciting because it's going to talk about new developments in the town of San Anselmo. They recently banned the use of single-use foodware. We'll also talk about how you can get involved in your community and how you can reduce the use of plastics in your own life. We look forward to being with you again for the next EFM Live. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to our sources, which include EcoWatch, BrooklynRail.com, National Geographic, The Guardian, The Daily Mail, Common Dreams, and many more. Thanks so much for listening.